Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Well, ladies and gentlemen, in today's show, in the second hour, it's my great honour to present a very important guest. First time on Truth News Radio, joining us from the United States, Susan Lindauer, author of Extreme Prejudice, a woman who's experienced the unpleasant side of the Patriot Act and the tendency of the US government to treat whistleblowers and people who are basically in the cause of truth and peace, to treat them as if they are essentially enemies of the state. She was accused of some very unusual crimes, which are not really very well known, and certainly nothing like espionage, which of course is what Edward Snowden was charged with. And of course, currently, just in the last hour, there has been news about the sentencing of Bradley Manning, who of course was charged with, I believe, aiding the enemy, and he has been sentenced to 35 years. So it's a very important moment in which Susan Lindauer joins us to discuss all this. Susan, welcome to Truth News Radio.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be on your show today, and this is a very important show for everyone to listen to, because this is where geopolitics becomes intersects with real life and becomes a very serious problem for those of us who believe in transparency in government and the accountability of elected leaders to the American people and to the world community. Bradley Manning, half an hour ago, this is pre-taped, sorry. Bradley Indeed. Manning was just sentenced to 35 years in prison. And I grieve. I want to start this show by saying I grieve deeply, and I regret, and I am so saddened by this travesty of injustice. He is a hero. He has performed a court. Bradley Manning has served the American military in the highest standard of integrity and honor by refusing to tolerate war crimes by U.S. soldiers and by insisting on the morality of the military. And to me, that in its behavior and its dealings in foreign countries, this would be to reward the My Lai massacre in Vietnam and to punish those who oppose Vietnamese war crimes. It would be Daniel Ellsberg. What a difference. Daniel Ellsberg exposed the Pentagon Papers to the New York Times, and the Supreme Court ruled in defense of the First Amendment of the Constitution. And it would be as if Daniel Ellsberg had been convicted for exposing war crimes in Vietnam and the severe abuses against the Vietnamese people. All of us are worse off. The whole world is worse off because of this travesty, this horrible decision. And we're going to talk today about Julian Assange and why. Great. You have got to support him more vigorously. This is a very serious. This is about the fate of the American people and the world community to know real events. Do we have rights to have access to information, or are we the enemy? Because this government is saying, the Obama administration is saying, that the American people are the enemy, and the world community is the enemy, if we know truth.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that really strikes me about this, and this is something that I often talk about on this show, is the distortion of language, which again was something that George Orwell focused on heavily in his dystopic picture of the future, where meanings of words are completely transformed. And what I'm talking about here specifically is the word espionage. Now, it's quite clear no one has ever said that Bradley Manning was selling secrets to the enemy. There is no prima facie case for that whatsoever against Bradley Manning. And yet here it says in black and white that he has been convicted of violations of the Espionage Act. How
Six
is that even
violations
possible?
Violations of the Espionage Act for giving documents to a news organization. Now, that is WikiLeaks. Now, in the I am offended by this on several counts. First of all, the U.S. government is, and the British government and all the powerful forces that be that are still in dominating our political systems, they are all declaring that internet media is somehow less journalistic and has fewer rights to freedom of speech than, say, the New York Times or the Los Angeles Times, which are quote-unquote the real media, and that we are somehow, internet media is somehow less qualified to be protected by journalism. And yet what we see over and over again is the New York Times sells out the news. They prostitute themselves to the political elite, and therefore they are the ones who are controlled. And the WikiLeaks and the radio media and the internet media are dealing in primary sources. We are the raw, uncensored news, and we should, in the stature of things, we are the pinnacle of actual news coverage, and we're the source of information that's real, true information, and the New York Times is all censored and spinning. It's spinning for the government. And I despise the New York Times. I won't read the New York Times. If someone says they're a New York Times reporter, I turn away from them immediately.
Yeah, it's kind of sad, isn't it? Because, you know, the history of the New York Times, you know, it was the New York Times that published the Pentagon Papers originally, was it not?
Yes, that was 30 years ago.
And
30 years ago, yeah. The New York Times was a real newspaper.
Yeah.
Now it's a propaganda mouthpiece for Washington.
And as we've seen, all of the major news outlets, all of the major publications and broadcasting and radio, they're all interconnected now. They all march to the same tune.
They're all owned by General Electric,
right,
or some major corporation, multinational corporation. And it's all about, you know, putting people to sleep, keeping them doused up in Kool-Aid, drinking the Kool-Aid, so that there's no active rebellion against whatever marching orders the corporations are giving to the political elite. And it is now treason to expose criminal behavior by the elite. And we need to remember that. That we are exposing crimes. We are exposing dishonesty. We are exposing corruption. These people are not entitled to receive protections from the American people when they break the law. But they have put it, they have now rewritten the laws. So if we expose what they have, the crimes that they commit, we're the bad guys. They're not criminals for doing the crime. We're criminals for exposing that they have done the crimes.
Yeah, and no one even talks about the crime anymore. I mean, that was what was very apparent with what Bradley Manning revealed. The most important thing he revealed being the massacre there that it took place in Baghdad in 2007. And I was quite amazed, you know, because when that first came out, everyone, like for the first week, was focused and shocked by the information that was there that was showing quite clearly the massacre of unarmed civilians, right? But then almost magically, that stopped being the subject of the media's attention, and it became Julian Assange. It all became about the man. And the exact same thing happened with Edward Snowden. You know, it's like suddenly it shifted from being all about the doings of the NSA and the violations of the Constitution to what's Edward Snowden up to this week? Oh, he's here, he's there, is he going to get away? And it becomes this little narrative, this story to distract you about the man, and we forget about the story.
I think that's inevitable, actually. I think that it's inevitable that because of the significance of what they were revealing, that people would be curious about them. And I can assure you that here in the United States, there's now a great debate about the NSA and the heavy surveillance that is being subjected on the American people. And Edward Snowden made a difference, and so did WikiLeaks. Both of them made a difference because, in fact, Bradley Manning, I do disagree with you. Maybe in the Australian media that was true about Bradley Manning and the war crimes issue. But here in the United States, when he started talking about the war crimes by American soldiers, a lot of things – now, for those of us who had been paying attention to Iraq,
yeah,
we knew all this stuff always anyway.
Yeah.
The Iraqi people were fully informed. He was not aiding the enemy. The enemy – you know, since when did the Iraqi people become the enemy? They're supposed to be the – we're supposed to be rescuing and liberating the Iraqi people, right? But the American people, those of us who pay attention – always knew about these war crimes. This was nothing new. But what Bradley Manning did was he released it in such a way, and WikiLeaks broke through the ceiling of and penetrated the consciousness of ordinary American people so that they took the message outside of the core group of anti-war followers, and they took it and pushed it into the consciousness of the regular, ordinary American people who had until then been drinking the Kool-Aid, and they were absorbed in, well, whatever the Bush administration says is right. Oh, there must be, gosh, why are they hating us so much? Why are they fighting us in Iraq? Well, there's a good reason. There's a very good reason. The soldiers are doing hideous things over there. They're unforgivable things. And these are real war crimes. And it's offensive to the American people. See, the American people, this is so hard because you're a foreigner. You're in Australia.
Yeah.
From my perspective, I know that I'm a foreigner to you and you're a foreigner to me. The American soldiers want, and the American people have this deep, childlike need to pretend to believe that we are the good guys.
Yeah.
We cannot do wrong. It is impossible for an American soldier to do wrong because we are liberating Baghdad. If we're killing people, well, we're liberating them.
Yeah.
If we're starving them, well, we're in this under sanctions, well, we're saving them from Saddam Hussein, so we're willing to kill 2 million people. Ah, if you don't want your child to die from starvation, well, gosh, you know, how could we be to blame for that? Americans do not comprehend global politics. We do not see ourselves in the connection on the ground to any other human force. Other nations, you don't really have, you don't have a reality to us. You are not a political people to us. We are in complete isolation. And it's probably because of our geographic continental basis. We don't even like Mexico.
Now we're just
or
going
Canada.
To break. We're just going to break. Sorry to interrupt. We're just going to break, Susan. We'll continue with that after the break. Some really interesting points there. And I will address a couple of those that you've raised. We're just going to break you with Truth News Radio Australia. Do stay with us.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now.
Truth News Radio. It's great to be with you today, and it's great to be with Susan Lindau today, a really passionate anti-war activist, a person who's had direct experience of war, the negotiations and diplomacy involved in war, and you should definitely check out her book, Extreme Prejudice, which details her whole story. I'm not sure if we're going to have time to get into all the details of that today because we're kind of focusing a little bit on current events, which is actually really important. One thing I'll just note there, you were talking about the US and the way the US perceives itself. I think, Susan, another important thing to remember is we perceive America as well as the great liberator, and this is sort of a meme that goes back to World War II, is that everything is kind of like a recreation of this meme of World War II, to the extent of, you know, when they went into Baghdad and toppling the tower there and that kind of like symbolism of America coming in and bringing freedom.
We are conquerors, and we are imperialist, and we are not doing this to help anyone. We are doing it for greed, for the defense military industrial complex. We're doing it to steal your resources and your oil. If you are, there is no freedom anywhere that we have gone. No. And we are wreckers. Yeah, we are a wrecking ball. I regret to say it. It makes me not happy at all to say that. Let me just tell you something about my story, and I want to apply this to Julian Assange.
Sure.
For those of you who don't know, I was the chief CIA and defense intelligence asset covering Iraq at the United Nations before the war. We negotiated a peace option that would have prevented the entire conflict, including Saddam Hussein going into retirement. And I gave advance warning about 9/11. That's going to have to be a whole different show.
Yeah.
But I just want to say I was a back channel for 7 years, and this conflict was very easy to avoid. It would have been very easy to stop this thing. I did the Lockerbie negotiations with Libya. I did the weapons inspections talks with Iraq, with Saddam Hussein's ambassadors at the United Nations. They were very cooperative at all times. Now then, here's why you don't know about this. Mm. 30 days before, I was arrested on the Patriot Act. I was the second non-Arab American woman indicted on secret charges, secret evidence, secret grand jury testimony. I was locked up in Carswell Prison, Carswell Air Force Base, with no trial, threatened with 10 years of indefinite detention, with no trial or guilty plea. I continued to demand my right to a trial. You have all heard of me. Every single school child knows that George Bush and the Congress turned around and blamed the assets in the intelligence community for failures in pre-war intelligence. And they said that the war was my fault. I actually received letters in prison from anti-war activists saying, "You did this to us. If you hadn't done your job right, you wouldn't. I don't care if you're in prison or not. If you had done your job right, we wouldn't have had this war." Well, bullshit. This is why the government tries so desperately to control intelligence and information, because they don't want you to be empowered with the facts, because they are not capable. They do not have the courage, vision, and leadership to take responsibility for their own actions. Transparency and accountability threatens their ability to hold on to power. If you'd known there was a peace option on the table, I bet you would have had there would have been an uproar.
Sure.
And so I want you in Australia to know why I needed Julian Assange. If I'd had Julian Assange, and if I'd been able to get to WikiLeaks myself, I, who was indoctrinated in the secrecy of the intelligence community, I did not have the capability, the skill to give this directly to anybody to have widespread dissemination of this information. I needed a Julian Assange to help me that he would be able to give this to you. And Julian Assange and the role he fills is absolutely vital to a healthy democracy and a functioning democracy. Because I, the intelligence operative, I'm extremely good in intelligence. Oh, baby, I'm the best of the best of the best. You don't get to have Saddam Hussein and Gaddafi and do anti-terrorism work like I did if you're not very, very good at what you do. But the very things that make me good in intelligence are become weaknesses. They become handicaps when it comes time to get this information to the public. Mm. And so we as a society have got to recognize that a Julian Assange and a WikiLeaks are the critical element, the yeast, if you will, that causes the bread to rise so that we can all have the food and sustenance of knowledge of what our government is actually doing in our name. This is a democracy and a republic, and they are, we, okay, in the United States, we say we have a government of the people, by the people, for the people. That is our government. I, the American citizen, am the boss. I have a right, a fundamental, God-given, we call it an inalienable right, to know what the heck our leaders are up to in our behalf, because they're doing it for us. And I needed a WikiLeaks. I needed Julian Assange. He is something that we have got to protect, because a whistleblower requires the second part. As a whistleblower, I required a second part to get that information to you.
Do you think, what do you think they're really up to with Julian Assange?
Obviously, I think they're going to indict him.
Right.
I think that he's going to be looking, if it's unfair. Here's the problem. It is grossly unfair. Julian Assange, let me state the obvious, is a foreigner. He is not subject to the laws of the United States. That is an extraterritorial application of federal laws, an extraterritorial obligation that is a burden on him as a citizen of Australia to be subject to American espionage laws. He is a journalist. He is as every bit as – we've got to start seeing this. Internet media is every bit as authentic as the New York Times. In my opinion, we are more authentic than the New York Times, because we will provide primary access to real documents so that the public can view it, study it, examine it, and make their own decisions.
Can I just ask you briefly, Susan, what's your take on The Guardian? Because The Guardian seems to have broken the mold here.
Bravo to The Guardian.
And of course, it was The Guardian that published a lot of the WikiLeaks materials originally as well. But The Guardian, of course, broke a lot of the stories that Glenn Greenwald wrote, being a writer for The Guardian.
Yes. Bless The Guardian. Absolutely.
I mean, it's a good – is that a good sign?
Now,
is that a sign?
Isn't
that,
it interesting? Yeah. Now, I am very proud of The Guardian, and I salute The Guardian. I applaud The Guardian. Isn't it interesting that no one would dare to say The Guardian is violating the law? No one would dare to arrest the publisher of The Guardian, but they want to arrest the publisher of WikiLeaks, who's doing exactly what The Guardian is doing.
Yeah, indeed.
The Guardian and the WikiLeaks are the same. One of them is a 100-year-old newspaper publication that is read on Downing Street, and WikiLeaks is an internet publication that is read by millions of people all over the world. Isn't it interesting that the two are both functioning as publishers, but one has protection and the other doesn't? Now, I support The Guardian, and I think WikiLeaks should have the same exact rights to protection as The Guardian. And I think that Julian Assange should be considered the same equal as the publisher and the editors of The Guardian.
And yet that's the way they've got around that, of course, is from these very bizarre and bogus accusations from Sweden that don't even actually amount to a charge. He's not charged with any crime, and yet they managed to issue an arrest warrant for a man who wasn't charged with a crime. I mean, how weird and Kafkaesque is that? We are just going to break. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, and we'll be continuing with this fascinating discussion right after this short break. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. My guest today is Susan Lindauer, an author, a former CIA asset, as she describes herself, someone who negotiated with the Iraqis in the lead-up to the war, a back channel to the Iraqi government. And we're going to do a number of shows, hopefully, with Susan, where we get into a lot of the details there. And she was also involved in negotiations with the Libyan government over Lockerbie, which is something I would love to talk to you about in detail, Susan. I think that's also a very important topic.
I would love to come back on just to do a show on Lockerbie alone.
Indeed.
That is huge.
Indeed, indeed. And you know, I followed a lot of that, a lot of the lead up to the toppling of Gaddafi. And I know there was a connection there. I still don't quite understand it, but how it wasn't long after the release of al-Megrahi from that prison in Scotland that it all started to fall apart for Gaddafi.
I'll tell you why very quickly, and then we should go back and talk about Julian Assange. I heard from, because I had such great insider sources tied to Libya and Lockerbie, I was told that Gaddafi was demanding kickbacks from U.S. oil, U.S. and British oil, as compensation for the sanctions.
Ah, yes.
And right, because they all knew that he was in it, that Megrahi was innocent. He never did it.
Mm.
He was absolutely a victim of geopolitics and the deception and the power of Washington and London to fabricate evidence in cases and to hide evidence in cases. And once Gaddafi got him back out off, he said, okay, we suffered for 10 years under sanctions and somebody needs to pay us back. And when he started doing that, I was like, oh, you know, wave it. This is like poking a bull with a sword. The bull is going to ram you. They're going to gore you for this. Sure enough, within a year they did.
Yeah, yeah. And
a year later, it was over for him. As soon as he started doing that, it was the end.
Incredible.
But we'll come back and we'll talk about that another show. I really want to talk right now about Julian Assange and why asylum. I want to use the next half hour to explain why asylum is so vital as a tool and why it is not a dramatic ploy. Sometimes in Washington, and pardon me, I know you're Australian, but in Washington they try to say, oh, he's hiding out. He's just trying to get attention. He's being narcissistic. He's being overly dramatic. Why would he think we're going to arrest him? Well, in these national security cases, all of the protocols of law, of due process, go straight out the window. There is no rhyme or reason to anything. Because of my own opposition to the Iraqi war, I was accused of being a, quote, foreign agent of Saddam Hussein. Now, there was never any evidence that I received any money from the Iraqi government. It was absolutely a lie. They had to make it up. They were finally, it came down to the fact, I'm not joking, that I had three lunches with Iraqi diplomats in New York City right after 9/11.
Yeah.
One of the most expensive cities in the world. The lunches totaled $92.92.
Right.
For two individuals, three lunches. Come on. But in other words, my share of that was like $46 for three lunches. That's like $15 a lunch. Sorry about that. That's my little dogs. But you get the idea.
Sure. Yeah.
It is the same thing as saying that Julian Assange had consensual sex with a woman who using a condom and the condom broke.
Yeah.
And therefore he raped her because the condom broke. But it was consensual sex, but you're not allowed to have sex with a faulty condom. Well, how is he to blame for a faulty condom?
Yeah.
Or he had sex with a woman in the middle of the night when they were both kind of sleepy.
Yeah.
And they kind of rolled over and started having sex with each other. And in Sweden, you're not allowed to have sex with a person who's half asleep? Are you kidding me?
Yeah. It's just such an insult to your intelligence.
How many men and women do that every day? Yeah. Give me a break.
Yeah.
Every night. I mean, come on. This is just these are the arguments for arresting Julian Assange, and he should be afraid. He should be very, very afraid. There is a secret grand jury that has convened in Northern Virginia, which is one of the most aggressive and corrupt, I would say, very unyielding is the nice way of putting it. Unyielding, unforgiving, strict interpretation of national security law, because it's where the CIA is located and a lot of military bases, and they take law and order to a whole new level of extremity. It's very bad over there. I would never to put this in context. On the morning of my arrest, the FBI agent said to me, looked at me, turned around, laughed, and he said, "Bet you're glad you don't live in Virginia." That's a fact. Right. "Bet you're glad you don't live in Virginia." And I looked at him and I said, "You're right." I said, "Yes, sir." And I was like, "Whoa, yes." Because my whole predicament would have been 1,000 times worse in Northern Virginia, let me tell you.
Really? Oh, boy. Just by chance of being living in Virginia.
Oh, God. Yeah. So if Julian Assange is transported to the United States, he will be facing a due process that has never been seen in the world since the Middle Ages. Okay, you literally, for those of you in Australia who are familiar with international law and expectations of due process, you literally have to go back to Henry VIII to find the kind of legal system that we have in place right now. In these situations, Julian Assange would not be allowed to see evidence. There would be many secret evidence, secret witnesses who would be allowed to you can't even imagine this stuff. Witnesses who would be allowed to testify to the court, to a judge, outside the presence of Julian Assange. His attorney, if his attorney wanted to hear the witnesses testify in court, his attorney would be forced to sign a non-disclosure agreement that under no circumstances would he ever tell Julian Assange what those witnesses had said.
Oh, that is so medieval,
isn't it? And if he did tell those witnesses what he said, if he did tell Julian Assange what the witnesses said, that the attorney would go to jail or be disbarred.
Incredible.
There is a very famous case of Lynn Stewart, who was herself arrested and sentenced to 10 years in prison because she signed the agreements to obey these protocols and then violated them. And she did things that ordinary cases allow. You're allowed to communicate with your damn client. Not in national security cases, and they are aggressive and ferocious in prosecuting it. It is crazy, crazy stuff. I was declared, quote, incompetent to stand trial 3 weeks after my attorney signed a non-disclosure agreement and had a private debriefing at the Justice Department. If whatever they discussed, my attorney was never allowed to tell me the meeting occurred and was never allowed to debrief my attorney who replaced him, because I fired him. I was like, I'm getting rid of you.
Sure.
After my release from prison, I was ambushed. Literally, I was ordered to go to court, and my attorney was not allowed to tell me that I was about to be ordered to go to prison. And I was ordered to go to prison with no right to a hearing. Now, ordinarily, an attorney would be defending their client vigorously and saying, "Hey, you cannot send her to prison without a hearing."
Yeah.
"Oh, no, 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 you can't do that." But he had signed an agreement that he would do what he would obey the prosecution in every context of communications, in every interaction. The prosecutor would set the would create the demand, and the attorney would obey the prosecutor, not even obey the court, obey the prosecutor.
That is just an amazingly sick and twisted system. I have never heard this before.
I was ordered to attend court one day with no attorney present.
We're just going to break, Susan. We'll be right back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Really important discussion. Do stay with us. With Truth News Radio. We're talking about some very dark and very twisted legal systems here. The provisions that Susan Lindau was held when she was arrested for being the unregistered agent of a foreign power, which itself is a very bizarre crime. Certainly not espionage, but I think it carried a 10-year sentence with it.
25 years.
Really, is that right? But of course, all your charges were dropped in the end. Is that correct?
Yes, they were dropped 5 days before Obama's inauguration. The reason I was accused of being an Iraqi agent was that I had opposed the Iraqi war.
Yeah.
And George Bush declared that you're either with us or against us. And the fact that I opposed his policy in his mind made me an enemy of the state. That's all it took.
Yeah.
There was no action. They were never able to say, here's what you did that caused you to become a foreign agent. So because I had no actions that they could identify, what they did was they said, it's secret. These are secret charges. You know what you did. We don't have to tell you. And we do not, the court was not obligated to provide any evidence that the alleged crimes actually occurred, and the court was not required to identify what events qualified as a crime that made me a foreign agent.
Yeah,
do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They never had to, they hit me with a label. And then so that they could tell the media and the whole world, oh, she's a foreign agent of Iraq. But then they refused to identify what the actions were because they said those are classified.
And then they said you were mentally ill.
The other thing they did, they
asserted that you were not mentally competent.
Yeah. Well, here's what they did. The reason they wanted to say that I was mentally incompetent was that the politicians on Capitol Hill desperately desired to blame the intelligence community for the failures of Iraqi pre-war intelligence, which prompted Congress, poor little members of Congress, to vote stupidly to support the war. Well, it turns out that the chief asset had been me, that would be me, had been all over Capitol Hill taking around a peace option, making sure that everyone knew there was a peace option that would have resolved the entire conflict without firing a shot.
Sure.
We could have had Saddam Hussein's retirement included in that package. And we'll have to go off on that at another interview. I'd love to come back.
Yeah, I'm really interested in the details.
But right now I want to talk about Julian Assange. This is so important.
Can I just ask you a quick question about the UK, Susan?
Sure.
Because we've talked here about the US and the abominable situation of rights and the laws there that are in the US. But the UK is in an equally parlous situation in regard to the way people are being treated. And you've probably heard in the news, for example, the partner of Glenn Greenwald, the Guardian journalist who broke parts of the Edward Snowden story, was detained at Heathrow Airport under the Terrorism Act in the UK. And
thank God for Brazil. Brazilian diplomats, Brazil being, the fourth largest economy in the world, exerted its power and its integrity and its Brazilian diplomats fought back and said, you do not have the right. This man is supporting freedom of the press. He comes under our protection. We will protect him. And we demand that he be allowed to return to our country. This was an extraordinary event. Brazil deserves tremendous thanks from all of us. That's what it's going to
take. Yes, and the Brazilian government has shown that sort of resolve in the past on other issues too. I know there have been cases where the airplanes that fly into the US with the whole business about fingerprinting, I think the Brazilian government was going to apply the same procedures to the US planes that fly into Brazil. But anyway, just I'm digressing a little here. But I just want to point.
Yeah, they said quid pro quo.
Yeah,
it's,
indeed,
it's good
indeed.
For us, and it's good for you
and
too.
And they showed a bit of backbone.
You're not exempt from the law either.
Indeed.
But I want to talk about Julian Assange because this is so important for you to understand the types of severe dilemmas that this is why asylum becomes necessary, because it's not just like an effort to escape the law. When they say, oh, we'll give you a trial, they will.
Yeah.
It will be a kangaroo court, a kangaroo judge who's already been ordered, who's already been instructed. The judge behind the scenes would be instructed by the U.S. government what the findings should be. There would be deliberations that Julian Assange's attorney would not be allowed to hear. They would have their own debate, their own discussions on how this proceedings would unfold. Julian Assange's attorneys would be shut out of those communications. Whenever Julian Assange's attorneys were allowed in to those communications, they would be, before they were even allowed into even the secondary or third part meeting, like the lower meetings, they would be forced to sign documents stating that they would never disclose to Julian Assange himself as the defendant or to other attorneys in the case what activities are being decided by the court. And they would have to agree to the secret evidence. They would have to agree to the secret charges. And believe me, it would be littered with this kind of stuff. If the United States government decided Julian Assange would get 30 years, there is no doubt in my mind that if Julian Assange is ever extradited to the United States, he is looking at a 30-year prison sentence, period, end of discussion. Because they will railroad this thing any way they want.
An interesting twist on this, Susan, is that Julian is actually a candidate in the upcoming election in Australia, and there's a lot of support for the WikiLeaks party in Australia, and he could actually win a seat in the Senate. As a man virtually imprisoned there in London, potentially under indictment. He could still actually be a sitting member in the Senate. I mean, isn't that an incredible situation? I mean, that's sort of unprecedented in history, isn't it?
Situation, and I believe that Julian Assange must hold his ground, because if he loses, every time our side has a loss, it's a new precedent that they will build on to take away more of our freedoms. We have got to stand now and fight now and defend our country now. I am sorry. I am so sorry that I was deprived of a trial. Everyone thought they were doing me a favor by refusing to let me have a trial. I believed I believe now that, yes, they couldn't convict me because there was never any evidence to convict me with. But I believe the whole world would have been better if you'd known the real facts about Iraq and 9/11. And I believe that transparency and accountability is a price that we have got to pay, because it's just too valuable. Whatever price you have to pay to get transparency and accountability is necessary. But Julian Assange has got to win this fight, because otherwise the internet media will lose to the New York Times. We must have the same protections as The Guardian.
Can I just ask, Susan, we don't have much time left. Just a quick question here, which I'd love to get into in a lot more depth. But I mean, do you support the general thrust of the 9/11 truth movement? I know you've spoken at a number of events and things. Is your understanding that...
I believe that 9/11 was a 1-2 punch.
Right.
The airplane hijackings were a cover for the controlled demolition. and that the airplane hijackings, and I do not believe that an airplane hit the Pentagon. I do not believe that an airplane crashed in Shanksville.
Right.
But I think that the Twin Towers, there was something going on. Maybe it was a drone, it was an airplane. It was some type of airplane, whether it was commercial or military is also another question. But, I believe that the buildings were already positioned with explosives.
Yeah.
And that it was what we call a cover and deception operation. It's like a magician's trick. Once you realize that, everything makes sense. It's like a magician's trick. All eyes are on the left hand and the airplanes flying over the towers, over the water and striking the towers. But the real action that brings it down are the explosives. And that's why it's a magician's trick. You are fooled by your eyes.
Were you fooled by it initially? When did you first become aware that this was a
scam? I knew we were going to have explosives before it ever happened. Right. We were told all through the summer of 2001 by the CIA that this was going to be that explosives would be involved. We expected airplane hijackings and some sort of thermonuclear device is what we were told. And we expected mass casualties. We always expected the towers to come down. I don't want to get hung up on whether it was a nuclear device or thermite device.
Yeah.
Because in fact, that's the kind of thing that science needs to examine.
Indeed.
And that's something architects and engineers are the best sources for. I totally support architects and engineers for 9/11 truth. That's where you get your science on that. But the concept that there would be airplane hijackings and explosives, it's both. It's not one or the other. It's both.
And you were actually aware of this at the time as part of your work. You were actually getting that sort of intelligence on a regular basis.
Spring and summer of 2001. And I'd love to come back and talk about that too.
Look, I think we need to do a show on that. We need to do a show on your involvement in Iraq, and we need to do a show on your involvement in Libya. I think I'd just like to encourage everyone to take a look at your book, which is available on Amazon. I'll put links to it there. And I'd really just like to say thanks so much for coming on today.
Thank you very much. I really would love to come back. And everybody, please give your support to Julian Assange.
Indeed. Well, that's another show for this week. Thank you very much for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. I'll be back next week. See you then.